The Struggle for the Banner. There's a footnote. In commemoration of the Synod of Dort, which convened on November 13, 1618. Originally published in November of 1918, just days before the end of World War I, and 1 year after the fourth centennial of the Reformation. Thou hast shown thy people hard things. Thou hast quenched us with wine of confusion. But thou hast given a banner to those who fear thee, to uphold it because of the truth. Psalm 60, verse 3 and 4. It appears very much as if the madness of war has been passed from the battlefields of the world to the churches. Recently we held our great Reformation celebrations. Great was the glittering of our weapons, and now again we have a reason to rejoice in a victory after a great struggle. In these days we may remember the National Synod of Dort, which commenced its meetings on November 13, 1618. Yet we do not seek war for the sake of war. Even the alertness which we admire in the Synod of Dort is no expression of militarism that wants to fight for the sake of a battle. But in 1618 the preservation of 1517 was at stake. In the year 1517 the Reformation had restored the Bible to us, and 1618 preserved the Bible. In the year of our Lord 1517, people were somewhat quick. The spoil had indeed been seized, but was not safeguarded enough. That was done in 1618. In 1517 the gold had been revealed by the, also spiritual, son of a minor, Martin Luther. But he who panned the gold had no time to refine and purify it from the dross. That was done in 1618. Then the gold of the Reformed doctrines, which arrogant people do not even know, even though they revile it, was purified and brought to the fore. In 1517 the stream of life out of free grace burst out and became a beautiful panorama of a roaring waterfall. But in 1618 that mighty stream was conducted into its bedding. At that time the bedding was deepened and the flowing streams of free grace obtained the appearance of the quiet majesty of a mighty flowing river. But all of this did not come about just like that. The poet of our psalm also knew very well that the banner of truth is not raised automatically. Before it would come thus far, there first was misery to be endured. Thou hast shown thy people hard things. Thou hast quenched us with wine of confusion. That is a double misery. The hard things have come from the outside, while the wine of confusion, when consumed by us, comes from within to bother us. What the poet meant is revealed by the heading of the song. There had been a battle with two hostile powers, first with the Syrians, and after that with the Edomites. The Syrians were at that time a powerful nation, yet they were subdued. But as soon as the battle was finished, the sweet perception that now at last demobilization and peace would arrive was cruelly disturbed. For suddenly there were reports that, while the Syrians were defeated in the north, the Edomites had treacherously entered the south. In response to these tidings, the army immediately had to turn around. And when Israel's forces thus marched toward Edom, this psalm was composed. There's a footnote here. The heading which revealed the outcome of the battle against Edom would obviously have been added later to this psalm. No doubt this was difficult. It was a bitter pill to swallow, wine of confusion. To think that war is finished and yet having to fight again. But was it not actually the same in the days before the Synod of Dort? In 1609, after fighting Spain for 41 years, the combatants had finally obtained a truce for 12 years. And the United Provinces of the Netherlands were acknowledged, also by Spain, as independent territories. Finally, there was a pause in the waging of war. Finally, peace and time to breathe again. Indeed, that was what the people thought. but the rest and peace did not come about. For the Remonstrant, Arminian, disturbances brought at least as great a misery on the land as the war which temporarily had ceased. Yet, also in another aspect, Psalm 60 is our psalm in this week of commemorations of Dort. For who were Israel's enemies? First of all, the Syrians. That was easy to understand, for they were heathens of the most heathen kind. But after that, Edom. That was the second enemy. And that was so utterly sad. For was Edom not a brother nation? Edom, that is the same as Esau. Jacob and Esau. That contrast has remained a permanent antithesis. They were born in one tent. They were brothers, begotten by the same father. But a quarrel arose between those two brothers. And that quarrel was in essence the matter of predestination. Jacob I have loved and Esau I have hated. This explains everything. Jacob was God's chosen man in spite of his sin. And Esau was not chosen in spite of his robust and impulsive nature. That was a fact Esau could not swallow. It was Esau who stormed heaven in the personification of man's own strength. And that wrestling match between Jacob and Esau has become a reflection of the world. The one brother fought against the other brother. This war was continued by their descendants, and always revealed to him who is able to see the struggle between spiritual and unspiritual seed, between the predestination of God's free workers and the self-confident will of His Highness man. That struggle was also at stake at the invasion of Edom into the borders of Israel. It was the ancient family feud. Our fathers in the Netherlands had similar experiences, first against Syria and then against Edom. That means first against Spain, against the Roman Catholics, the Inquisition, Philip II, and his mobs. That was terrible. It was a hard thing, wine of confusion. But it was even harder when they had to fight against the Remonstrants, for they were Edom, the brother nation. They were with us sons of one father, born with us in one tent. For were they not also children of the Reformation of 1517? Indeed, they were. But just as in the tent of Isaac the breach continued, thus it also did in the camp of the sons of the Reformation. That was the controversy between the Reformed and the Arminians. And again, the case was predestination. Again, the old resistance emerged of all the Edomite wisdom, which could not justify that, though Jacob was no more human than Esau in himself, God accepted the one and rejected the other. It is a hard thing, wine of confusion. But redemption did come. Thou hast given a banner to those who fear thee. The heathens have a proverb that says, whoever the goddess wants to exterminate, she will make crazy and unreasonable by giving him wine of confusion. That's a footnote. The Dutch says, wie de godheid verdelgen wil, dien maakt ze dol, radeloos, dien geeft ze zwijmelwijn. That can be translated as, he who wants to exterminate godliness should make it absurd and unreasonable by giving it wine of confusion, as we originally did translate it. Yet the present translation is likely what the heathens meant. But Christianity does not say this. God gave the wine of confusion exactly for the sake of preservation. And from the confusion, the tottering caused by this vine of confusion, Christianity came to the certainty, the resolution of the banner. Indeed, the banner, that is the compendium of what the combatants know and want. The banner, with its flashing shout of joy, its comprehensive and clear motto or fitting symbol, is the link that unites the warriors. Thus David saw his warriors march on, forward, and they carried the banner ahead. But as they marched on, David's soul rejoiced in the fact that God himself went ahead of his brave warriors, that God himself pressed the banner into their fist. Thus it was also in the days of Dort. The banner was fully revealed. The standard of the Reformation was held high, sola fide, by faith alone. Yet that faith was no merit, for if that were true, as the Arminians said, then the Reformation was again denied. Then Rome, with its doctrines of deserving faith and salvation, was yet right. No, said Dort, in our banner it is clearly stated that man is saved only by grace. Thus also his faith cannot be his justification before God. You can see that it was not a new motto. There was no new banner. Listen, footnote here. The inserted words, but now, in the Dutch translation of Psalm 60 verse 3, were thus actually added incorrectly. There was no new banner. It was the old banner. But it was again thrown into the battle. And its motto, the doctrines of free grace, was consistently developed even within the great concept of predestination. Only in that way God alone would get the glory. And that indeed was what Luther already wrote in the banner of the Reformation. God has again given that banner to his warriors. This fact contained, also for David, the element of redemption. He saw them go out with the courage of lions, for it was God himself who led them into battle. Thus it was well. When Israel itself took the ark into the army, the battle was lost. But when God gave the banner, victory came. Thou hast done it. That is the jubilation of the text. That was also the consideration of Dort. For the Remonstrants wanted to examine the doctrines on the playing field of equality. But the church did not yield to that pressure. She knew that the banner of the word was given into their hands by God himself. Because of this, our fathers were not allowed to deal with the Remonstrants, who undermined that word, on the basis of equality. For that would have been a placing of the banner behind the curtain. Thus their gratitude was also contained in this. They did raise the banner with David's servants, or, as it can be better translated, they did assemble themselves around the banner. There's a footnote here. For several reasons, not to be mentioned here, we reject yet another translation. They sought to escape the banner. The battle was fought with a view to the motto of the banner and its password, the principle of 1517. Then these people worked miracles. We, who struggle for years about one sentence in Article 36 of the Belgian Confession, stand amazed about such a work as the Canons of Dort, written in such a short period of time. They have exclaimed God's sovereignty, but also his compassion, his irresistible will, but also his serious calling of the gospel, his non-rejective counsel, but also our responsibility, his singular working strength in regeneration, but yet also our renewed activity. And how can this miracle be explained? Indeed, because they raised the banner for the sake of the truth. There's another footnote here. Thus, based on several grounds, we also cannot translate as many want to do, they sought to escape from the bow. The very context rejects such a tasteless concept. The truth itself was the driving force for them. They could not do otherwise. And what about us, sons of Dort? We often entertain ourselves with the poor game of raising the banner for the truth. But that is easy enough. To struggle for a dogma, for a motto, for a slogan of our party. Reader, do you know the strength of Dort? Are you raising the banner because of the truth? Because you yourself are seized by it? Exactly the heritage of Dort, the doctrine of election, presses the question to you, if you also very intimately, very dearly, know the personal fear of God and its fruit. Thus let us stand for that power, that inner strength. Only then you will know the sweet joy of a dirt pleaded for in such sober language. It is not of you, not of the will of him who runs, but of the compassionate God. Only thus we are children of dirt.